You're listening to Evil, a true crime podcast. Join me each week as I bring you real people, real stories, real crimes, and the evil they encountered. Welcome back. Today I have a co-host, a very special co-host. Say hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast. Today I'm going to be talking about domestic violence. So I just wanted to go ahead and give you guys a trigger warning for that. And domestic violence is also known as intimate partner violence. I wasn't really sure, and I'm still not quite sure how much I want to share about myself, just because I know how human beings by nature can be. But I told myself when I wanted to start this podcast that I wanted to be as transparent as I can possibly be. My hope is that by sharing people's stories, I can just get their name out there and maybe provide a little bit of justice to their families and the victims themselves by keeping their names alive. All right, so before we get started, I wanted to share some facts about domestic violence. I just feel like it's important. I feel like even though it's 2022, almost 2023, domestic violence is still very stigmatized and almost like victim blaming. And I really don't like that. So I wanted to go ahead and just give some facts about domestic violence. Do you know what domestic violence is, eh?
Yes.
All right. What is domestic violence? You tell me what you think.
It is like abuse. Yeah.
Abuse in which way?
Like, you know, just fighting people.
Fighting between
like
who?
Violence. People, you know?
Like.
like.
You're right. You're on.
Spouses and. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I'm going to give you some facts because I think it's important, and especially because the victim in our case today was under 18 years old. She was 17 years old when she was brutally murdered, and when the abuse, I guess, started, or when she met the perpetrator, she was 13 years old. But I just think it's really important, like I said, to go ahead and give these facts. So according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence website, domestic violence by definition is a pattern of behavior used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner in an intimate relationship. Domestic violence doesn't discriminate. So anybody of race, height, weight, color, sexuality, education level, religion, economic status can be a victim or a perpetrator of domestic violence. And that includes behaviors that physically harm, intimidate, manipulate, or control a partner, or otherwise force them to behave in ways that they don't want to, including through physical violence, threats, emotional abuse, or financial control. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men experience severe physical violence or sexual violence. 1 in 7 women and 1 in 25 men have been injured by an intimate partner. 1 in 10 women have been raped by an intimate partner. Nearly 20.9% of female high school students and 13.4% of male high school students report being physically or sexually abused by a dating partner. And that is incredibly, incredibly high percentages, especially for them being still in high school. It's crazy. The presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation increases the risk of homicide by 500%. 500%. Is that not crazy? That's insane, right?
Yeah.
So women between the ages of 18 and 24 are most commonly abused by an intimate partner. And intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of all violent crime. Kellyanne Bates was born May 18, 1978. She was born in Hattersley, Greater Manchester, England. She was born to her parents, Tommy and Margaret Bates. Her parents were really excited and overjoyed when Kelly was born, and she made her appearance 2 weeks early and had a head full of dark, thick hair. Kelly was an easygoing baby. Oftentimes, her parents would be the ones to have to wake her up so she could eat. As Kelly became older, she was said to be very mature for her age. She was kind, thoughtful, extremely confident, and independent, and like, come on now. For like a 13-year-old?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, she's doing awesome. She's killing it. Her maturity made Kelly appear much older than she really was. And no offense, A, but like, They do say that girls mature faster.
Yeah, yeah, we know.
Kelly really had a confident sense of self. So at 13 years old, she really wanted to play hockey for the local team. So guess what she did?
She played hockey for the local team.
Yeah, she tried out and she made it. She was playing hockey with women much older than she was. Kelly had super supportive parents and she was excelling in school and in sports. Life seemed to be going really well for the teen.
So she's just like the dream child.
Yeah, she's killing it. Like, she is doing awesome. On April 16th, 1996, James Patterson Smith reported to authorities that he had accidentally killed his girlfriend during an argument in a bathtub.
How do you accidentally kill somebody?
Exactly. In a bathtub, yes. How do you accidentally... My thoughts exactly. He claimed that she had inhaled water and died following his attempts at resuscitation. He also claimed that she often pretended to be unconscious.
Who pretends to be, like, knocked out? That seems kind of weird.
Right, that's sus. That's totally sus. But, like, who the hell is James Patterson Smith? So, James Smith was born in 1947. He was an unemployed divorcee. He was living in the Gordon area of Manchester, and he's described by people who knew him as being house proud and well groomed, as well as a non-smoker and a teetotaler. Now, I didn't know what that was, so I had to look it up. And basically, what a teetotaler is someone who doesn't drink or abstains from drinking alcohol. James had been married before, but his marriage ended in 1980 after 10 years because he was violent and abusive towards his wife.
So he has a record of beating people.
Oh, it gets better. Like, he's a total dickhead. His next relationship was with a 20-year-old named Tina Watson, and he dated Tina between 1980 and 1982, and it was quoted that he used Tina as a punch bag. The monster even beat Tina while she was pregnant with his child.
That could have killed the child.
Yeah, like, he's a total piece of shit. Tina was quoted as saying, "At first, it was now and again, just a little tap, but in the end, it was every day. He would smack me in the face or hit me over the head with an ashtray. He would kick me in the legs or between the legs. Just take that in for a moment. This is the mother of his child, and this is how he's treating her. Like, it's disgusting."
Clearly, he didn't want the child.
Like, he's a piece of crap. He's disgusting. I have no words for this man. Like, he's just gross. Tina eventually ended up escaping from the relationship and, like, hell yeah, Tina, get out of there. Get the hell out of Dodge and don't look back, Tina.
Good for Tina.
Right. She was quoted as saying that Smith had also attempted to drown her while she was bathing. Like,
so he's beat people and attempted to drown people more than once.
Yeah, so clearly he has issues. It gets so much better. Like, I say that better, but I really mean worse. So I'm being, like, if it's not coming off as me being sarcastic, just understand that I am being so sarcastic right now. In 1982, James started seeing a 15-year-old.
Beto.
Named Wendy Motorshead or Mottershead. I'm not really sure if I'm pronouncing that right. So if I'm not, I'm sorry. He also abused her, and in one attack, he held Wendy's head underwater in the kitchen sink while attempting to drown her.
Third time.
Exactly. Like, this dude has some serious, serious, like, serious anger issues. So now that we have the background on James Smith, aka total piece of shit in my opinion, let me tell you how he and Kelly met. This piece of shit met her and started grooming her when she was 14 years old.
Yo, she's, like, ninth grade.
Yeah, like, it's gross. It's disgusting. But, he met her when Kelly was babysitting for his friends, and he offered to walk Kelly home to keep her safe.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's hella weird. Initially, Kelly had told her parents that she had a boyfriend named Dave, and she wasn't very forthcoming about his age. So for 2 years, her parents thought she was dating someone from school. Kelly would mention Dave, but she really wouldn't give too many details about their relationship. So a little sus. A little while after Kelly and Dave started dating, her parents started to notice that Kelly started to act a little bit more rebellious. Now, Kelly had always been super close with her parents, and she had a really good, strong, and loving, trusting relationship, so it was a little odd when Kelly started to sneak out of the house at night and not returning for days.
So, she was probably out with Dave or, yeah, or James, whatever his name is.
One time, Dave called Kellyanne's mom, Margaret, to check if Kellyanne had made it home safely because he was concerned. And for a short while, they were really reassured. Like, that made Margaret feel so much better. She was feeling like, oh, this guy must really care about my daughter. Here he is calling to check to make sure that she made it home safely.
Oh, what a good guy.
Right. That's what Margaret thought. That was until Margaret met Dave. Margaret recalls that one day she came home to her house in Hattersley, England, and she found Kelly standing in the kitchen. Unbeknownst to Margaret, Kelly had brought her boyfriend Dave home. Kelly's mom said that when she first saw Smith, the hairs on the back of her neck stood up. Margaret was shocked to see a grown man in her kitchen. They told Kellyanne's parents that Dave was 32. Like, can you even imagine? I would flip out. Are you kidding me?
That's almost your age.
Don't put my age out there. but, like, if my child brought home, like, an adult, I would flip out. I would literally freak out. I don't care if he was 32 or 49. You're way too old to be dating my daughter. After that, Margaret did try to talk to Kellyanne. And she didn't try to push too hard just because she didn't want to push Kellyanne away. But Margaret tried to talk to different people in the area to see if they knew anything about 32-year-old Dave. But she always came up empty-handed. No one knew anything about Dave. Do you know why?
It's because Dave's not his real name.
Yeah, Dave doesn't exist. Dave was actually 49-year-old James Smith. Margaret was quoted as saying, "This wasn't the man I wanted for my daughter. I vividly recall seeing a butter knife in the kitchen and wanting to pick it up and stab him in the back," she said in an interview. And, like, can you blame her?
No, that's, like, a grown man.
Yeah, I don't blame her. Like, I probably would have felt the same way. In my opinion, for Margaret to have such a strong reaction to someone she barely met, it almost comes across like mother's intuition to me, or like she just had a bad feeling about this dude. Like, subconsciously, maybe she knew, like, I don't know. You ever just meet people or like just look at someone and you could just tell they're just not a good person?
Yeah.
And like, maybe she just had that feeling. But Margaret tried to get Kelly away from Dave, but Margaret didn't want to push too hard and push Kelly away. 2 years later, when Kellyanne left school, she moved in with Smith at his house. Now, this made Kellyanne's parents extremely uncomfortable, and they were skeptical about her decision. But her parents agreed as long as she would keep in contact with them. Kellyanne was 16, and in Britain, she was an adult, so there wasn't much her parents could do.
But there's still, like, a, like, what, 20-year age gap?
Yeah, but there's literally nothing that her parents could do. I mean, I'm sure they could go to the cops, but at that point, she was a legal consenting age, so they really couldn't do anything. Kellyanne's parents had always trusted their daughter's ability to make good decisions, and they didn't want to take that away from her, which, like, it's reasonable. I get it. She's always been able to make good decisions, so, like, they're trying to give her the benefit of doubt, and that's understandable. While living with James, Kelly did leave James once, for a short period of time, because of some arguments they were having. But by the end of November 1995, Kelly was 17 and she was back living with James. Her parents were starting to notice changes in Kelly's behavior, and also bruises on Kelly's body as well as deep bite marks.
So, not only is he hitting her, he's biting?
Yeah, he's biting her. Like, they're not like, and these are not like little bite marks. I mean, these are deep bite marks. Yeah, he's a weirdo. Kelly would lie and always had some excuse for it. She would often say she had some sort of accident. She even came home once and told her parents that she had been attacked by a group of girls and that that was the cause of her black eye.
And what about the bites?
She always came up with some kind of just excuse. She would tell her mom she ran into the wall, or she accidentally cut herself, or she accidentally hurt herself. When it, like, her mom could literally see that it was a bite mark, like somebody's teeth in, you know, her imprints, and Kelly would lie. But unfortunately, that happens often. In cases of domestic violence, the victim always lies, and it could be because they're embarrassed or shame or just so many different reasons why it happens. Kelly became increasingly withdrawn, and in December of 1995, she quit her part-time job.
That's not a good sign.
No. Now, according to the hotline.org, some of the common signs of abusive behavior in a partner are as follows. And I think this is incredibly, incredibly important to share, so I wanted to share this. Telling you that you never do anything right. Showing extreme jealousy of your friends or time spent away from them. Preventing or discouraging you from spending time with friends or family members or peers. Insulting, demeaning, or shaming you, especially in front of other people. Preventing you from making your own decisions, including about work or attending school. Controlling finances in the household without discussion, including taking your money or failing to provide money for necessary expenses. Pressuring you to have sex or perform sexual acts you're not comfortable with. Pressuring you to use drug or alcohol. Intimidating you through threats, looks, or actions, insulting your parents, or threatening to harm or take away your children or pets. Intimidating you with weapons like guns, knives, bats, or mace. Destroying your belongings or your home. Pulling your hair, punching you, slapping you, kicking you, biting you, choking you, or smothering you. Preventing you from contacting emergency services, including medical attention or law enforcement. And these are just some of the examples of abuse. So we already know that James is isolating her. He has made sure that she doesn't have much contact with her parents. She's not calling them as much. She's not in school. And she just quit her part-time job. So she's with James all the time.
24 hours getting beat.
Basically. Unfortunately. After a while, Kelly stopped going to visit her parents. While Kelly's brother tried to see her at the house, James said she was not home. And when neighbors asked about her, James briefly showed her a window that was upstairs. Like, I guess saying, like, oh, she's up there? I'm not really sure what that was about, but that's basically what he did. Just showed her a window.
Maybe it was a bathroom.
I don't know, but in my opinion, I think it was a combination of James not allowing her to go see her parents, and also Kelly was probably embarrassed and maybe like ashamed at not wanting her parents to ask and like question her what's going on and why she's being so different and withdrawn and why she has bruises all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure Margaret knew that James was being physically abusive with her, but again, Margaret didn't want to push Kelly away, and there wasn't much Margaret could do at the time. Margaret raised concerns about abuse with Kellyanne's doctor. Now, the reason Margaret did this was, so if Kellyanne went to her doctor and she had obvious signs of abuse, her doctor wouldn't question it further because she already knew. Margaret had already told Kellyanne's doctor what had been going on. So, like, if Kellyanne came in with, like, a broken arm or something and she tried to say, oh, I fell or something, and the doctor knew that that's not what was happening, she wouldn't question Kellyanne. She would just note it in her chart without Kellyanne knowing, if that makes sense. So, in my opinion, that was pretty smart. Margaret was quoted as saying, I didn't know what to do. She was too old for the police to do anything. She wouldn't listen to me. And that's just heartbreaking. Like, it just shows how hopeless.
She tried.
Yeah, she tried, but there was literally, like, there wasn't much that she could do. And it's so sad. As a parent, I can't even imagine how helpless they must have felt. Like, I have kids myself, and, like, just the thought of not being able to help my kids and them, and me knowing that they're suffering and going through something that I can't take away just, like, really stresses me out just thinking about it, honestly. It makes me sick to my stomach, so my heart goes out to her parents. On March 10th, 1996, Margaret called Kelly to inform her that she had missed a dentist appointment, and that would be the last time they spoke to each other. Kelly promised she would come home to visit the family on Mother's Day, which was next Sunday, but she never did. Kellyanne's parents received cards that were supposedly from her, for Mother's Day, their anniversary, and her father's birthday. But here's this strange thing. Only James had signed it. Which is, like, weird because...
So, she didn't even get to see the card.
She didn't even sign it. So, like, why... Like, it's weird. Why would James sign it? It's not even his parents. Yeah, it's Kellyanne's parents. So, why are you signing, like, the cards? So, I can already imagine Kellyanne's parents being hyper aware of something not being right. 3 weeks before Kellyanne's death, Margaret and Tommy had literally had enough, and they were going to go to James Smith's house and check in on their daughter. They wanted to make sure that she was okay. They hadn't seen her, they hadn't talked to her, and I'm sure them getting cards and not her not writing was probably the final straw. And, like, can you blame them?
No.
I can't blame them either. But the moment that Kellyanne's parents were getting ready to step outside, Kellyanne's brother, Andrew, came home and told them that a friend had seen Kellyanne, and she was fine. Margaret was quoted as saying, "We were so pleased, it never entered my head to ask when she had been seen. It turned out it was in December."
Mm-mm.
On April 16th, 1996, James called authorities, and he said... Now, you remember what he said. If you don't remember, I'll recap it for you.
I accidentally drowned.
Yep, but let me tell you. On April 16th, 1996, James called authorities, and he said that he had accidentally killed his girlfriend during an argument in the bathtub. He claimed that she had inhaled water and died following his attempts at resuscitation. James also claimed that Kellyanne often pretended to be unconscious, which, again, like we stated beforehand, what the fuck? I've never dated someone who pretended to be unconscious. And, like, why would anyone do that? Let's be real, James, that didn't happen. Like, you're lying, you're full of crap. That did not happen. What happened was that authorities went to James's address, and when they got there, they found Kellyanne's naked body in the bedroom. Okay, now, I'm going to have to do a major trigger warning. What you're about to hear is horrific. It's gruesome. It's a major, major trigger warning. So, again, I'm going to give you guys a huge, huge trigger warning because this is horrific.
Wait, it was in the bathtub, though, so he, like, carried her out and put her in the bedroom?
Yes, yes. Okay, you ready for what I'm about to tell you?
Sure.
Kellyanne's blood was found throughout the house. Her autopsy revealed that she had over 150 separate injuries on her body. Like, what the fuck? How does someone hurt someone 150 different times and claim that she accidentally drowned in the bathtub? It's beyond me. Like, that didn't happen, James. You're lying. During the last month of Kellyanne's life, she had been kept bound, sometimes to a radiator or furniture, by her hair, and at other times by her neck, using a ligature.
What even is a ligature?
Ligature. So, a ligature could be, like, rope, something that's made, like, nylon, something that's basically used to, like, tie you up.
So, something used to tie you up.
Basically, but it's not, like, rope. It could be made out of just...
like, zip ties.
No, that would just be zip ties. I don't think that would count as a ligature. I'll actually, like, Google it. I'll Google it, and next time on the next episode, I'll let you guys know what a ligature is by definition. William Lawler, the home office pathologist who examined Kelly's body, said, "In my career, I have examined almost 600 victims of homicide, but I have never come across injuries so extensive." Now, here's where I'm about to go into the following injuries that were found on Kelly's body. So again, you've been warned. Kellyanne had scalding to her buttocks and her left leg.
Oof.
She had burns on her thighs that were caused by a hot iron. She had a fractured arm. Multiple stab wounds that were caused by knives, forks, and scissors. Kellyanne even had stab wounds on the inside of her mouth. Both of her hands had been crushed. Her ears, nose, eyebrows, mouth, lips, and genitalia were mutilated. She had wounds that were caused by a spade and pruning shears. This is really rough. Both of her eyes had been gouged out. She was alive when her eyes had been gouged out, guys. Like, so she could feel all of this.
So for the rest of the time she was alive, she was blind.
She was blind. Yeah, you're exactly right. This monster blinded her while he was still doing all of this stuff. But it gets worse, unfortunately. After her eye sockets had healed, they were empty. There were stab wounds in her empty eye sockets. He even stabbed the sockets of her empty eyes because he was that fucking horrific. And she had been partially scalped. The pathologist determined that her eyes had been removed not less than 5 days and not more than 3 weeks before her death. Kelly had been starved and had not received water for several days before she died. Peter Oppenshaw, the prosecutor, said, "It was as if he deliberately disfigured her, causing her the most pain, distress, and degradation. The injuries were not the result of one sudden eruption of violence. They must have been caused over a long period and was so extensive and so terrible that the defendant must have deliberately and systematically tortured the girl." They determined that the cause of Kelly's death was drowning. So, even though he did all of those things to her, that's not what killed her. She survived all of that. Is that not insane?
That's kind of crazy.
She survived all of that.
And then got drowned.
And he, no, this is what happened. So it's a little bit more than just drowning. That was her cause of death. Her cause of death was drowning immediately prior to which she had been beaten about the head with the shower head.
Oh. How did he take the shower head off?
Like, that has never, I've never actually seen, like, a report. I've looked at different, like, articles and stuff, and it never really, like, said what kind of shower head, or, like, if he took the shower head off, if it was, like, one of the long handle ones that you could take to, like, wash your body with. So, I'm not really sure what kind of shower head, the reason he did that is because he's just an asshole. Like, what a monster. It makes me so upset to sit there and think, like, that this person claimed and made her believe that he cared about her so much, and this is, like, what he did to her, and it just, like, breaks my heart for her family and for her, because she didn't deserve it at all. Like, nobody deserves anything like that. It's horrible. At trial, James denied that he murdered Kelly, and he was quoted as saying that Kellyanne would put me through hell winding me up. He also claimed that Kelly taunted him about his dead mother and that she had a bad habit of hurting herself to make it look worse on me. So this coward not only groomed her and took advantage of her, abused her, and murdered her, and now has the audacity to sit there and victim blame her as if she deserved what he did to her. It's disgusting. She really, you're trying to tell me that she really sat there and taunted you for you to take her eyes out, for you to stab her 150 fucking times, for you to do all kinds of, all the horrific things that you did. Like, it's beyond me. This man has some issues, and I'm going to have to find, a picture of him so that I can, like, show it to you, because he's just so fucking ugly. But, it just pisses me off. Like, the audacity of this fucking douchebag to sit there and say, like, oh, she challenged him to hurt her. He's so gross. I can't. At the trial, other women that Smith had abused came forward and described him as a misogynistic man who was incredibly jealous and manipulative and would turn to violence to control others. A psychiatrist named Jillian Meese, I don't know if it's Jillian or Gillian because it's like, over, you know, in, like, Britain, so I don't know if it's Jillian or Gillian, but Meese told the court that Smith had a severe paranoid disorder with morbid jealousy and that he lived in a distorted reality. So basically, like, he's a psychopath.
Oh, well, yeah, we knew that.
Like, he has to be. On November 19, 1997, it took the jury at the Manchester Crown Court just 1 hour to find 49-year-old James Smith guilty of Kelly Ann Bates' murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. The judge, Mr. Justice Sachs, recommended that James serve a minimum term of 20 years. He stated, "This has been a terrible case, a catalog of depravity by one human being upon another. You are a highly dangerous person. You are an abuser of women, and I intend so far as it in my power that you will abuse no more." And to that we say, hear, hear, that judge meant it with his whole chest, and we love that. It took Kelly's family over 20 years to be able to speak about what happened to their beloved daughter. And, like, nobody can blame them. What they went through was traumatic. What Kellyanne went through was absolutely horrific, and nobody should ever have to go through that.
Any normal person would take a long time to talk about it, if they even choose to.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. If they even choose to. Because I don't think, if somebody ever did that to my kids, I don't think I'd ever be able to speak about that, honestly. I think I would just be so heartbroken. Margaret Bates, Kellyanne's mother, said that she still thinks back to the moment in the kitchen when she first met Smith. "It was a bizarre thought. I would never normally think of anything so violent, and now I wonder whether it was some sort of sixth sense," referring to the moment when she wanted to stab Smith after meeting him in the kitchen those years back. Margaret was also quoted as saying, "I want him to die, just like Kelly did. I know I shouldn't say this, but I wish I killed him the first time I saw him. That way, Kelly would still be alive." And she's not wrong for that. I think any parent who loves their child, and not even a parent, I think any person who loves another person and has had them brutally murdered or taken away from them in that way would probably feel that same way. I know I would. I know I definitely would. Margaret Bates passed away shortly before Christmas Day on December 2020. Now, I'm not a super religious person, but I would like to say that I'm a spiritual person. So for me, I know it gives me some kind of comfort to think that after all these years, Margaret was finally able to be reunited with her sweet baby girl, Kellyanne. And that's how I want to leave this case. That's how I want to end this case. Just thinking of Margaret reunited with Kellyanne. And that, my dears, was the sad and horrific case of Kellyanne Bates. What'd you think, eh?
I thought it was a pretty sad case.
Yeah, it was sad.
Pretty tragic.
It was probably one of the worst cases that I've heard. Probably one of the most gruesome cases that I've heard. That is the case of Kellyanne Bates. If you or someone you know are in an abusive relationship and you're planning to leave, please make sure that you have a safety plan in place. According to thehotline.org, here are some important steps that you can take to help prepare to leave an abusive living situation. Identify your partner's use and level of force so you can address the risk of physical danger to yourself and others before it occurs. If possible, keep weapons like guns and knives locked away and stored and as inaccessible as possible. Identify safe areas in your residence with pathways to exit away from weapons if arguments occur, and try to move to those areas before they escalate. Let trusted friends and neighbors know about your situation and develop a plan and visual signal for when you might need their help. Give them a clear instructions on who you do or do not want them to contact in a moment of crisis, including law enforcement. Back your car into your driveway when you park at home and keep it fueled if possible. Keep the driver's door unlocked with the rest of the doors locked to allow for quick access to the vehicle. If the violence is unavoidable, make yourself as physically small as possible. Move to a corner and crawl into a ball with your face protected and arms around each side of your head, fingers intertwined. If you or anyone you know are in an abusive relationship and want to speak to someone, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text START to 88788. Once again, if you or anyone you know are in an abusive relationship and want to speak to someone, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text START to 88788.
Hey guys, it's A. To stay connected to the podcast, follow us on Instagram at evilpodcast88 and on TikTok at evilpodcast. Our Twitter is evilpodcast80. This is for if you want to just see what we're up to. So follow us, say hi, give us feedback, and see you on the next podcast.
Bye guys, over and out.